Okay, let's start. Can you hear me? No? Can you hear me clearly? No? Okay. Apparently, let's see.
Turn that down a little bit. That's the mute. Okay, you want it on the other side.
No? No? Okay, I guess now we can start. So today we will learn about C and some basic things in systems. So this is the agenda for today. First, we will talk about some difference between pointers and arrays. We will learn about how to use the man page, some difference in structures and C and C++. We will talk about some undefined behavior in our programs that we may see while we are doing our assignments. And if time permits, we will start talking about instruction set architecture. So let's start with pointer versus array. So here I have two variable declarations. One is A1 and one is A2. Here, A1 is an array of three integer elements, and A2 is a pointer which is pointing to some memory where we are supposed to put some integers. So who can tell me what's the size of A1 and what would be the size of A2? Yes.
So A1 is an array of size 3, and A2 is the pointer.
Yes. So I guess I wasn't clear about my question. I was asking what would be the size in bytes, but your answer is still correct. So let's see when we allocate it, how it would look like. So A1, it's an array, and it has three integers. So it has place for three integers. Each integer is assuming 4 bytes. We will have the size of the whole thing would be 12 bytes. But A2, so pointers, they keep only an address to a memory location. And usually an address is 64 bits, so 8 bytes. So that's why the size of A2 is just 8 bytes. And this is the memory that has been allocated to the pointer. And the pointer contains an address, and that address may have an integer, but we haven't allocated it yet. So that's why it's shaded as not allocated yet. In C, if we want to actually put some integers here, we will have to allocate it with the malloc statement, which we will see later. So let's do the exercise once again. So the first one, it's the same almost. For the second one, now it is a pointer which is pointing to an array of three integers. And if you can see that, we can actually permute use different combination of parentheses to declare different things. So first, let's take a look at the first two ones, which are mostly the same that we have seen in the last slide. So the first one here, this is an array which contains three integers. And all these three integers, have allocated memory for them. So that's why the size of this one, A1, is 12 bytes. The second one, it's kind of similar to the last one. So it's an array of pointers. So we have three spaces where we could keep the address of three separate integers. So basically, it's an array of pointers which are all each entry is actually pointing to a memory which will contain integers. And this portion is not allocated yet. So with the declaration star A2, 3, basically means that we have the space for three addresses. And each address is 8 bytes, so that's why the size of A2 is 24 bytes. So now let's take a look at the third one. So this is also an array. So by these three elements, it means that there is an array of three elements. But A3 itself is a pointer. So for A3, the only thing we have is a pointer which points to an array of an array of three integers. But again, this portion, the gray portion, is not allocated yet. So that's why the only allocated thing is the address, which is 8 bytes. And basically, the fourth one says that it's actually same as the second one. So if we put parentheses at the outside, it doesn't change the meaning of it. So basically, A2 and A4 are the same. So the takeaway here is, if we have an array, like the first one, we have allocated space for that array. But the pointer is just an address. That address would point to some memory space where we could put an array of integers. But the pointer itself is just 8 bytes. It just keeps storing the address. Any question here? So for A2, A3, it points to the first one. So then if we actually want to access the second one or third one, we have to use the indexing. Like the starting address is, so suppose if it's A3 plus 0, that's the first element, A3 plus 1, that's the second, and so on. Yes?
For the first one, you're saying that the
allocated space for the array is the 4 bytes, and you just add the additional 8 bytes with 1 to 3. For the first one? Yeah. So for the first one, we actually have space for three separate integers. And each integer is 4 bytes. That's why in total we have 12 bytes of space for A1. Do you want to add something?
So you seem to think that there must be a pointer because we declared A1. There is not. We can make a pointer to the first thing, but there's no one there. Which is why we're going over this.
Yes.
Difference.
Yes. Okay. So basically, suppose I want to declare in an array. So here I said int array 100, which means that similar to this one, the first one. Now we have space for 100 integers. And we can also declare a pointer, which should reference to integer. And if we do this, if we assign the array to the pointer, that means that now this pointer points to this array. So that, I think that's what kind of you're asking. So now there is a pointer which says that I have this memory space allocated for this array. And this is actually a legal operation. So this is how we can use a pointer to point an array. And you can ask that if the reverse direction is legal or not. Actually, it's not legal. So you can think about why, and most probably a picture is better here. So if we have an array, there is like maybe three or some elements there. And how can you actually assign an address to those three elements? So this is basically, this is not a legal operation. Don't do this. And you will get an error if you do this, actually. Any question? So this is basically just refreshing what I already told you. So if I take size of array, I will actually get the size of the whole thing, size of all elements, considering each integer is 4 bytes, this one would say 400 bytes. But if I take the size of pointer, it will just give us the size of the address, which is 8 bytes. But what happens if you give, if you want to know the size of the first element, first pointer? Okay, so let's assume this is what I, this is the argument I have in my size of operation. What do you think you will get? Anyone volunteering? Yes. So if I use this, you will get 4. So actually, it would work. So basically, what it's saying is it is still taking the address of the first element. And because it's an address, we will still get 8 bytes. If we want to just get the size of the first element, we could just have said array 0. But since we are taking the address, that's why we will get 8 bytes. Any more question here? Yes. It would take the element, so it will give us the size of the integer. So actually, it's actually very fun exercise to do. Like you can type size of array 0, or you can reference it, and try to see what happens. But the basic thing, I guess, what I do, I always keep these figure in my mind. Like whenever it's an array, actually there are elements there which is allocated in some space in the memory. But a pointer, it's just an address, and depending on what it points to, we could determine it dynamically. But the pointer, it's just an address. So if you keep this image in mind, most of the time it would be pretty clear what you're referencing to. Okay, so next we will like to know how to use math. Oh, okay, yes.
So if we have an array,
is
that a pointer that's set to the address of the first element of that array? Mm-hmm. If we checked
the equality, like, you know, the array equals that pointer, is that true or false? Are there different types, even though they're of the same address?
So if you said, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's true and it's legal. The rule generally is if you try to use an array like a pointer, the compiler will just convert it to a pointer to the first element, and that includes a quality check.
Okay.
If there's some, it basically only doesn't happen in cases where there's not a sensible thing to do, like the example we had of assigning a pointer to an array.
So when we want to know the first address, we actually don't give the zero explicitly because the compiler already does that. Like even if we say array, that basically means the first the address of the first element. Okay, so here we want to show how to use the man page. Basically. So whenever you're in this course, you will use a lot of shell commands. And sometimes you will have to use commands you may know or you may not know or you just don't remember the arguments. So I don't actually memorize all the commands and its arguments because there are so many. So that's why we have this thing called man, which is shorthand for manual. And if we type man and then we type something that gives us a page with a bunch of information about that command. So the first thing we could type is we want to know what is in the manual. And this just says that it is a format and display the online manual pages. It shows what are the options there are. There are some description options, and usually there are some examples. Okay, I guess there is no example. But this is what we could use to actually know about any kind of comment. So let's assume I want to know about chmod, and here you can see that chmod, it changes file modes or access control list. And it shows us what are the valid options. For example, we have minus F for file. We have, we could change the modes using numbers or extra permissions. But I guess that's what I will show you in the slide. So, okay, I guess I showed this one. This one is showing what we will see if we type man chmod. And so, some of the options that we will talk about today. So basically, this gives us a way to change the permission in some folders. And it could be any folder. Here I'm showing some home directory of some user. If you look at the man page, you will see that there are a bunch of parameters that we could use. And the one which mostly we will use all the time is recursive. So if you want to change the permission of the folder, there might be some nested folders in that folder. And most of the time we want to change the permission of all the folders within a folder. And basically dash dash recursive says that change the mode recursively to this folder and any folder that's been included in that folder. The next thing we could do is we could specify for which users we are changing the permission. So there are three options for that. We could specify user by you, there is a group which usually is the student and others. And let's assume that you're in your home folder, you want to make sure that other than you, no one else can read it. So in that case, what you want to say is you want to specify the other users, which are others and groups. And you want to say that I want to remove the read operation. So to say remove, we actually have to have these minus sign. And then because we are trying to remove the read operation, for read we say R. So this OG minus R says that remove read operation from others and group. And once we say which folder, it will just recursively remove all read operations for all other users. You could also say that maybe I just want to give execute operation to everyone else. Then instead of minus R, what we would have done is we would have typed OG plus X. So X is for execute, and for write, we use W. Any question here? Yes.
Is it possible to have write permission and not read permission?
Yes. So it is possible if you do that. What will happen is the other people, like you, group and others, they would be able to write a file, like copy a file into the folder, but not read it. But usually it doesn't make sense. So if there is any specific case where you actually want to do that, you could.
I guess I know, so two reasons for mentioning this. One is that this command actually does something on the lab machines. I know you think it probably should be the default, but it hasn't been. The other is that you might transfer files and find they're not executable. This is how you fix that.
So sometimes,
your home machine and found, I can't execute it. It's not executable. Why did that happen? You can fix it. You can make it. So you have permission to execute.
So I guess whenever you're you have downloaded your files, type ls minus la. So what does that mean? Use the man page to figure it out. It will show you all the files and their permission and see if you have actually execute permission. If you see that you don't have the execute permission, use this to get that. Any more questions? Yes. So I guess let's just look at the. So if I type ls is a command which just says that what are the files that we have in the folder, and it's actually also showing us what are the permissions. So it just says that this is a directory, and the user, which is I have read, write, execute permission. The group and others, they can read, they can execute, but they can't write. So basically, if you type man ls, you will see it has a bunch of options, and but I guess most of the time I use minus la, but you can use what's necessary for you. Okay, any more question? So another thing that will be useful for you is using the tar command. Which is basically, if you have a bunch of files and you want to make them into one file, you can use the tar. If you type tar tf and then the file name, it will say you that what are the files that we have within that tar file. So basically, it's table of content. And if just says that the third argument here, it's a file. So this is actually a very old command when we could have files in our system, also we could have tape. So file, by using if, we actually say that we are handling files. And most of the case nowadays, we are handling files. So I guess by default, just use the if. But then suppose if you want to extract the files within the tar, you type tar xvf and the name of the tar file. So here x is standing for extract. V is verbose, which basically gives you some information about what's going on. Actually, V, you will see that this verbose option, it's mostly available in all the commands. And most of the time, it's better to use it so if you know, so that you know if there is anything wrong with the command or not. And you can also create a tar file from any directory you have, and the command for that would be tar cvf, file name of the tar file that you want and the name of the directory. So here the C stands for create. The rest of the two options are usual ones, V for verbose and F for file, and that will just create a tar file of this directory. So when you're downloading your assignments, I guess this is what you should do to extract the files. Any question here? The next thing we want to talk about is using C for input-output. I guess you guys didn't actually use C before. So here in C, we use stdio.h to do any kind of input-output operation. And again, you can actually go to the man page. And see what kind of options we have for that. So basically, it's saying that it's a standard C library. It has std in, std out, and also it has std error. It shows how to use it, some description, and it's also showing all the functions that it supports. So there is functions related to file open, file close, but also it has printf. So this is the one we will actually use to output something in the std output. I guess let's get back to the PowerPoint. So this is, I already showed you. And here, this is printf. If you want to know exact the format of printf, you can use man page, but I will give you a high level overview. So printf is something we will use to output anything in the display. This serves the same purpose of cout. But in C, we don't have cout. We have to use printf. And you can see what's the difference between cout and printf. So the format of printf here is, so here I want to print customer, and then I want to print the number of the customer and the name of the customer. So the format of printf is we actually have to give these formatting options so that the printf knows what kind of variable we are printing. So I want to print one integer, which is the customer name, and then I want to print the name of the customer, which is a character, which is a set of characters. So in order to say that to printf, we have to put %d for integer and %s for string. So here, for cout, we actually didn't need any kind of formatting options or formatting string, but for c, we actually have to do it. And if, suppose I'm trying to print an integer, but I didn't, instead of %d, I gave %s, weird things will happen. You can check what's happening by writing some example code. But in order to make sure you have the correct output, the formatting string, it has to match with your variable type. So there is a bunch of different options we can use for formatting. And if you look at the man page, you will get a whole list. But these are the ones that are kind of used most of the time. So here, I guess the first one is %s, which is basically string. And I guess the example I have is here, hello world. Then if you want to see the address of something, we can actually give the formatting option %p, and it will print out the address of that variable. So if you're trying to debug something, it might be useful to see what's the address, but I guess in general we don't print out the address of a variable, but it's a very good option for debugging. Then for integer or any short or characters, we have a couple of options. We could use %d, which says in print it in decimal. We could use %u, which says basically print in unsigned. Then %x, which says that print in hexadecimal. So that's why you see that if these %d and %u, the output is just 42, but with %x, we will have the hexadecimal number, which is 28442. So these three are for integer, short, and character. But if you want to print out any long variable, you actually have to use %ld. So l here is for long. And for floating points or doubles, we have a couple of options again. So usually we could use %f. Then you will get something in this format with points. But we could also use %e to say that please print it in exponent format, scientific format. And %g is basically, the compiler could choose which one they want to use. Sometimes it will just use 42, or it could use, if it's nicer with scientific format, it will print in scientific format. Any question here? So you can also think about, I guess, okay, how would you print the percent sign? For that, we have to use it twice. So again, this is just a very simple, the operations that we mostly use, the formatting options. But you could actually go to the man page and try to see all the options that we have in STDIO. But see that there is this extra three here. Why is that? Let's go back to our command line. So if I type man printf, so this is actually not the C printf that we are looking at for. So this is a command line option printf, which is for shells. So this is actually not the one we are looking for. So that's why if I type 3, this is the file that we are looking for. And it shows us all the formatting options. And actually, there is a lot of options there. if you have time, you can take a look at it. So suppose you want to print a floating point number with specific number of points before decimal or after the decimal point. And all this could be done by specifying things in the formatting string. Any question here? No? Okay. So next we will take a look at structures and dynamic allocation. So have you, I assume you have used structure in C++? No? Okay. So let's start from the beginning then. So basically, structure is a collection of other variables. So it gives us a block of memory where we would put some variables that we want in a consecutive manner. So if I write struct and rec, then use these curly braces, in between whatever I write them, now they are part of this structure, which and basically what it means that we have this space in memory which will hold all the variables within the structure. So here I just have an array of integer which has 4 elements. So because each integer is 4 bytes, so the A would require 16 bytes. But then we have a pointer of this structure itself. So remember that pointer is just an address, right? So that's why we have this pointer called next, which has 8 bytes, and it's supposed to point to some other structure which we haven't yet allocated. So if we want to know what the size of this structure, it's actually 16 plus 8, 24 bytes. It has an array of integer, and it has a pointer which is supposed to point some other structure. So some other 24 bytes, which contains an array of integer and another pointer. So this is actually very useful when you would do your lab on linked list. So let's try to see how we can use these structures in C and how we can actually avoid some typing. So first thing here is suppose I declare this structure rational and it has numerator and denominator, and we can actually say that struct rational 2.5 and assign some numbers to it. Or also we could write struct rational and declare a pointer which is type of this rational and assign this 2.5. So basically it is working as, so by struct rational we are saying that this is a type of a variable. We have declared a new type which is rational, and within the structure we have two integers. But whenever we are declaring something, now we actually have to write struct rational, then the variable name. If we want to declare a pointer, we always have to write struct rational pointer. But there is a way actually we can avoid typing these struct rational all the time. How is that? We could use type definitions. type definitions basically says that we will use a short name for this the type that we have declared with the structure. So here you can see that what I have done is I have swapped rational with some other name for rational. And after that, I'm saying type diff struct other name for rational to the name that I actually want, the short name, which is rational. And after I have declared the type definition, now I can just write rational and declare a variable. So if I don't define the type here, every time we are using we are declaring something, we have to write struct and then the name and then the new variable. By using the type definition, we have created a shorthand name. So now if I say rational, it just means a variable, a structure type, which has two integers in it. Any question here? Yes.
Using type instead of
other than not having to type too much. So it makes the code more cleaner, I guess. Other than that, so think about a very large code base where you have multiple things, and it's basically just creating a namespace for it. Yeah.
I mean, like the hashtag define that you use at the top.
Can you use define for structures? No. So if you want to type, if you want to define a type, you actually have to use type diff. But by define, we actually use inline things. So suppose I can say that I have a code which always says that if x greater than y, do this, or otherwise do something else. So that's something I can do using define. But for the structures, you have to use the type diff. Any more questions? So there are multiple ways we actually can use the type definition and then use that to declare some structures. So this is, I guess, this is the way I have already shown, but there could be, some other ways. So if I say type diff structure, use the long name, and after that, when I add the curly brace, use the short name, that also is almost the same thing. So this is also declares a type variable, a type definition named rational. So basically this is equal to the first thing. Or you could also use this. You can just avoid the longer name and just define the short name at the end. That's also kind of the same thing. So you could use any of these in your code. Yes.
The first one, how does it know that when you use rational that you want to use that particular structure?
Because of this definition. So with this struct other name, and then we have declared the variables. By this, we actually have a namespace for this structure. And when we say type diff, then we are just saying that instead of using this longer name, we have created another namespace which is called rational. So this is actually, so without even using the type diff, you could write a very valid code, but you will just do type struct longer name something. Any more questions? Mm-hmm. No, so Okay, so yes and no, I guess. So if I say that rational dot numerator, we would be accessing this structure. But if I say rational x, then x points to some of the variables, then it's a different instance. So I guess for this one, we actually have a variable there, but I would say that maybe don't use it.
You don't have a variable because it's not really typed out. What if you were made it typed
out? Oh, okay, yeah, sorry. So for this one, here.
Well, if you made it typed out, if you put rational after the first one, before the semicolon, you would have an instance of the struct. Mm-hmm. You probably should never, ever do this, because it is very confusing and almost never useful. But that is why in C++ there is this strange semicolon after classes. It's because you can declare instances that you're declaring the class. As if it's useful, I don't think it is. And the same thing applies to structs. But for typedef, when you have typedef, that means the whole line doesn't declare any variables. It only declares types.
So either use this one or this one. I guess don't wait.
That one is fine.
I guess, yeah. Which one did you use in the, you'll see which one is used in the assignment. Yes.
So is that last one, how is that different? Is that generating an error? Is that like just not?
It will work. So it's just defining a type. So after that, you actually have, say, that rational. So in order to have an allocation structure, you have to say that rational x, rational y, rational z. So basically, think as it's an int now. For int, if you actually want to have a variable, you have to say int x. Just by having int, you don't have anything allocated. Any more questions? Okay. So, yes. Go ahead. These are the same thing. They represent the same thing. Here you used another line to say to give the type definition, and here this is more like a shorter way to do the same thing. So I think mostly I use this one. Okay. So structures, they actually when we are allocating them, there is physical memory space for those. So these are actually not pointers. As I shown in the very first slide, there are memory allocated for each of them. So suppose here I have defined, first I have the type definition, which is triple and it has three longs. And triple, I declare two variables of type triple, foo, and var. So for the foo, I say that, okay, I will assign 3 to each of the long that I have. So you will see that these foo.abc, they all will have 3. Then I can declare another variable, bar. And when I assign this foo to bar, what happens is I have allocated separate space for bar, and then I assign the values. So if I say that bar dot a is 4, then only bar would change, not the foo. So foo would be 333, and bar is 433, because they are not pointers; they are just regular variables. Yes. What happens when I
when you make bar, does that mean
bar equal foo? It just takes the values of foo and assigns it to bar. It creates this space and copies the values from foo to bar. But it's actually not pointing to foo. So these are just, we have just copied all the elements from foo to bar. And now we have this separate space for it. And if I change something, it will just change things in bar and not foo. So basically, it is very similar to any other type of data. So if I had int instead of triple foo and triple bar, if it was int a, int foo and int bar, and I say that bar is equal to foo, the value of the integer gets assigned to the new variable because these are not pointers. Bar to bar. So here, so in this line, if I say triple bar equal to bar, yes, because it's not initialized yet. But suppose I say triple bar, then I guess I say bar A equal to something, B equal to something, C equal to something, and say bar equal to bar. That's a valid operation. I don't think we will have an error, but it just doesn't make sense. So if you have integer A and you say A equal to A, it's a valid operation, but I guess there is, it's just redundant. So I guess that's why whenever you are looking at structure, think it just as a variable, but it's like a special type of variable which could have different things within that variable. Any more questions? So the next thing we want to say is how to do dynamic allocation. So we talked about how to define, how to write the type definition of a structure. And again, this will be helpful in your lab on the linked list. So here I'm saying that I'm defining a type, which is a structure of an item, and then it points to another item, which would be another structure. And we are naming it as list. So by writing the type definition and by having the short name, now it becomes like any other variable. But remember that we haven't actually allocated the space for that structure yet. So if I take a pointer of type list, that means that we actually have to allocate some space for the pointer. I guess it's very similar to any other variable. So if I say int pointer head, that means that I have an address. That address is supposed to point to something, but we haven't allocated it. So that's how why we will use malloc to say to ask for some space for that pointer. So here, if we say malloc size of list in the heap, we will have some space allocated. So it would be 4 bytes for the integer and a pointer, which is next. Okay, but remember that we actually also have to use free whenever we want to deallocate that space. So for the equivalent in C++ is for malloc is new and for free is delete. But in C, we don't have those new and delete. Instead, we always have to use malloc and free. With malloc, so okay, first when I just say that list pointer head, I have some space for the address. When I say malloc size of list, that actually allocates the space for the list. And when I'm done doing whatever I was doing with my linked list, I actually have to free the node. Yes?
Since it's a linked list, would you have to malloc every single node that you had on?
Yes. So with this malloc, I have just allocated one node. Suppose I want to allocate one more node. I guess I will have to do another malloc, but then I actually have to say that where the next pointers should go. So I actually have to give address of the head to the next node or wherever the way you want to connect it. So these are actually all the things you do in your lab. How to insert a node or delete a node. Any more questions? So suppose I want to use an array in my program, and I actually don't know what should be the size of that array. So if I knew I have these 10 elements in my array, I could have just saved that array and put 10 within the braces. But if we don't know what the size, we could actually use malloc to dynamically create some space for it. So again, because we don't have any new or delete in C we use malloc and free. So if I first declare a pointer to an array, which is int pointer array, and I say that allocate the space for 100 integer. That's what I would do. I would write malloc size of integer, which is one element, but then multiply it by 100 because I want hundreds of them. And basically, this is how it would look like. So the array, it's a pointer, so it only contains the address. And that address would point to some space in my heap where I will have these 100 elements. Each element 4 bytes, so we will have 400 bytes of space. But after we have done this, after we have allocated space, we could actually just use regular indexing to access the array. So array I would just access the ith element. But again, I guess always remember to couple malloc and free. Once we are done with all our work with the arrays, we are supposed to free the array. And this is actually simple. So here, if I just give the pointer, the compiler would know that it means that just free this space. Any question? So next we will talk about some of the issues with using signed and unsigned values. So usually when we say signed int or signed or just int, it means that we have some, we could have both positive and negative values. And when it's unsigned, then it's zero to some maximum. So when we are writing our codes, we should be very careful about how we compare signed value and unsigned values. So for example, we have an integer x, which is signed, and it has minus 1. And suppose we have another integer y, which is unsigned, and it has the value of 0. So print, if I say printf and try to print 0 or 1 depending on if x is greater than y or not. So if you look at the values, definitely x is less than y. So this is a true statement and it should print out 1. But if you actually write this code, you will see that it will print out zero. And the reason is we are mixing signed and unsigned. So when we mix signed and unsigned, usually they all get converted to unsigned. And depending on what are the things you have mixed, you may get different answers. So be very cautious when you have signed values and unsigned values. So I guess whenever you have unsigned long or even unsigned int, be careful. And there are some rules on how compiler would handle it, but I would suggest that if you want to have defined behavior, either cast it to what you want the variable to, so either cast them to both unsigned or both signed, but don't mix them. This is something I guess I will skip. So this is another example of undefined behavior. So here what we are trying to see is we have a function called test, and its argument is a signed number, integer signed number. And the function returns either 0 or 1. Based on if number plus 1 is greater than number. So in general, this should be a true statement most of the times, but there are corner cases. So what will happen if I give the maximum value possible in integer? What do you think would happen? Would the statement be true or false? How many things the output would be zero? Okay, one. Okay, no one thinks it would be true. So basically, the answer is it could be both depending on what the compiler is doing. Basically, that is why it's called undefined behavior. So we don't have any specific rule on what will happen when we are actually rounding up the highest signed integer value. So if it was unsigned, most probably it is still defined, but there are just some operations in compiler where things are not defined. So whenever you're doing something like this, so if you have a signed integer, and there could be corner cases where it will overflow or underflow. So the example that we seen, that was overflowing. So if I have given the highest possible integer value, then I add 1, it could round up to 0, or the compiler could say that okay, it could be more intelligent and say that I think the user might be trying to add 1 to the highest value, so I would not round it up. So basically, there is no rule on how the compiler should behave. So that's why, if we have these cases, it could be doing what you expect it to do. It could do some other stuff. It could also crash your program. And there are a bunch of undefined behavior that you may encounter. One that I showed, if there is a signed integer and if there is a underflow or overflow, it's not defined what the compiler should do. So I guess be very careful when you're using it. Then there are also all these cases, like if the pointer is out of bounds, so you point to some allocated area in memory, but then you go out of bound. It's not defined if what would happen then. Then if you have an integer and you are doing divide by zero and some other stuff. So basically, the conclusion here is whenever you're using signed integer and you expect that there could be corner cases with overflow or underflow, be very careful. Do you want to add something?
So I guess if you can go to the assembly. So notice here that the compiler got the answer wrong because it was doing something you probably thought was not needed, which is optimizing it to just get rid of the comparison.
So what compiler, so let's take a look at the code actually. So here in the optimized version, what it, the compiler figured out that this number is present in both sides of the equation. So the statement should always be true because number plus one should be greater than number. So it's actually not even doing any comparison. It's just taking one and putting it in EAX, which it's returning as the final value. So that's why it's always it will always give you output one, which you can if you think is not the case if you are if you may ran into overflow. And here, this is less optimized, so compiler is not as intelligent as getting rid of the number here, comparison here. So it actually does the comparison. It sets the register. I guess we haven't talked about registers yet, right?
We haven't talked about, setup, but that.
Okay. I guess basically it's
the condition
I guess it is just taking the two values and setting a register based on if they're greater than or less than. So this one is actually doing the comparison. This one is not. And we cannot say that compiler did the wrong thing because it's not defined what it should do. So that's why they actually could do, like the person who wrote this code, that person had the freedom to do anything he wanted. And these are other cases where the behavior is not defined. I guess I will briefly start the ISA, but any question here? Okay. So basically, in the next class, we will talk about instruction set architecture in details, and we will see a toy instruction set architecture that we will continue to use throughout the semester. But before that, we want to know what is instruction set architecture, why do we need to know about it, and what are the different types of instruction set. So instruction set architecture is the agreed upon interface between software and hardware. So hardware can do some stuff, but this is the interface, or it's the connection between software and hardware. We could ask the hardware to do stuff, but in order to tell that, we actually have to use the specific ways that the ISA defines. So in the upper levels, we have our problem, then we have programming language that we use to write a program to solve that problem, so suppose C or C++. And then we have compiler, which actually generates that code in a way that hardware understands it. So beneath the ISA, we have all the hardware components, because whatever we want the hardware to do, that it will do based on what instruction it's receiving from the ISA. So anything that is within the hardware and not exposed to the programmers or the system, that's actually microarchitecture. And anything and the interface that the hardware and software has, it's called ISA. So architecture is actually ISA plus the hardware implementation of that ISA. I guess, let's actually take a look at this. So what are the things defined? So it's basically a contract between software and hardware. And as you see that we talked about undefined behavior, right? So that was between the programmer and the compiler. But ISA is between the software and hardware, and we define things, how things should be done in the hardware. So suppose we want to say that add two numbers. So ISA would have an instruction add, and it will say that what should be the format of that add instruction. It tells us how many registers we could have in our ISA. It gives us the ways we could access the memory. Then there are a bunch of other things at the high level things that ISA defines. For example, if there is an interrupt in the system, how it should be handled, some task management, power management. So these are the things we won't talk in this course, but we will extensively look at how the ISA defines the instructions and how memory is accessed. But if you want to know, so this is actually a book which has all the rules, how these things are defined. If you want to know about the Intel ISA, you can actually Google this one and take a look. And nowadays, actually, we have a bunch of ISAs. So for the dominant one is x86, which Intel uses most of the time. If you have any ARM machine or Spark machine, they actually have a different type of definition. So it's basically saying what, if I want to tell the hardware to do something, what is the format I should use? That's what ISA defines. And I guess we will, do I have an example? No. So we will actually see some definitions in the next class. Thank you.